Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is how WLM Routing and HA Manager works together in WebSphere Application Server Network Deployment. The presenters are Kumaran, Nathan, and Krishna Jaladi. Kumar has more than 14 years of WebSphere Server customer support and testing experience in multiple versions from version 4 to version 8.5. Areas of specializations include integrated software console, install, application management, system management, WLM, J2C, and HA Manager. Krishna has more than 14 years of WebSphere application server customer support and testing experience in multiple versions from version 4 to version 8.5. Areas of specializations include JPA, EJB, WLM, HA Manager, Web Service, J2C, Web Container, Dynacache, HTTP Sessions, and IBM SDK. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Kumar.
Thanks, Kathy. We can move on to slide 2. Good morning, everyone. Okay, so today we are going to discuss how WLM routing works along with HA Manager in WebSphere Application Server. So our objective or goal is to make sure everyone understands how important HA Manager configuration plays a vital role in for WLM to work properly. So today we are going to see what is WLM and basic things about what is cluster and what is HA and how the WLM routing logic works and how Node Agent involved in workload management, how ORB involved in workload management, and why bridging HA Manager core group is important for WLM to work properly. We also show some request flow, how the flow goes between your client and the server. There are few trace points later in the presentation. We'll go over that. And we would like to mention few important custom properties, which will be helpful to diagnose a lot of problems and resolve some issues. And we will also touch base some of the common issues that we see in day-to-day life. And let's move on to slide 3. WLM overview, slide 4, please. So what is WLM? We might be hearing this again and again during this presentation. So workload management is a WAS facility that provides load balancing, failover, and affinity between the application servers in WebSphere clustered environment. There are a lot of workload management in WebSphere application server. In this presentation, we are just going to focus mainly on EJB WLM, how that interacts and works with the HA Manager. And I just have one example on HTTP server plugin, how that works, the difference, just to show the difference. And there are few other WLM also, like SIP WLM and messaging engine WLM. Most of the things are depend on HA Manager, but we are not focusing on this presentation for today, maybe in later presentation. So the EJB WLM, the request, as you can see, the JNDA lookup, EJB create, EJB method, and EJB remove, those are the requests will be WLM in the EJB.
On to slide 5.
Yeah, before we go over this WLM, the web server or HTTP server plugin WLM and EJB WLM, I just want to make sure one more thing again. Our WLM code has been stable for so many years. So actual issue in the WLM itself is very limited. And because of the configuration issues, mainly, as I said, the HA Manager configurator issue, we have been seeing recently so many issues. That's one of the main reasons why we wanted to provide this presentation to everyone, so that they make sure those things to be taken care, actually. So on slide 5, we are discussing about HTTP server plugin or web server plugin, how that works with the WebSphere application server. So as you can see, all the HTTP requests, the servlet for JSP is sitting on your web container. So the HTTP server plugin, if it detects the failure, it sends a request, it detects the failure, and there's a connection timeout in the plugin cfg.xml file or plugin configuration file. By default, I believe it's 5 seconds. So if it can find the server is not able to respond back, so it will mark the server as unavailable after that 5 seconds. And then it tries the next server in the server cluster. It does round robin or random. You can configure that in the plugin cfg.xml file. Let's move on to next slide, slide 6. This is the one we are going to have today. We are going to discuss mostly about this slide in the presentation. So you may be hearing the ORB, how that involved, and you may be hearing how the RMI works and how the HA manager works all together. So this is a picture for EJB client ORB plugin, how that works. So as you can see in the middle, the application server containers, like the EJB container sitting on app servers, so where your EJB is deployed. So the client can be on the left-hand side, as you can see. The client can be your web container or the other application server. It can be your servlets or JSP, or it can be any other client which is sitting on an application server making a request to your EJB container. And on the right-hand side, as you can see, it can be your standalone Java client, which makes a call to the EJB container or the EJB, which is running on the Sphere application server. So the important point to note here is this Java client, you should use the IBM ORB. It has more thing bundle. It's the main thing is the IBM ORB that you needed for the WLM to work properly. If you are just using Sun JRE, then WLM may not work properly. We do get PMRs very often saying that Java client is not working well or the WLM is not working properly. That may be because of this reason. So make sure you do use the IBM ORB for the WLM to work properly from the standalone client. And there are one other client also, the pluggable application client that comes with the application client installation. So you can use the launch client to launch. That's one other client, but it's not showing up in the picture. So you can use that also. That is completely, you don't have to worry about it because the WLM part, the ORB part, works automatically from that application client, actually. So it's the same, very similar to what we have seen in the previous slide. It detects the failure, the client detects the failure, and it marks the container as unavailable. When we talk about the client, we are talking about the ORB client, which is running on the client side, actually. And it tries the next server in a server cluster. This works the weighted round-robin request distribution. We are going to see how the weight mechanism can distribute the request along to the other web containers, sorry, the EJB containers. Let's move on to next slide, slide 7. So let's talk about cluster. What is cluster? So most of you may be very familiar with this, but we just want to give some basics about what is cluster and how that works in the Sphere application server. Let's move on to slide 8. Clusters. What is a cluster? It's a cluster is a set of application servers that are managed together and participates in WLM. So cluster also enables enterprise application to be highly available because the request can automatically be routed when one of the server is not responding or it's crashed or for whatever reason. The servers that are in member of cluster, we call it as cluster members. The servers that are member of the cluster can be on the same machine or it can be on different machine. Cell, when we call a cell, it's nothing but a network deployment. Altogether, we always call it as a cell. That can include no cluster or one cluster or multiple clusters. There is no limit for how many clusters you can have in a cell. And the server that belongs to a cluster, or we call it as the cluster member, as I mentioned earlier. And it must have all the identical configuration. For example, you have created a cluster with two cluster members, and you deployed an application on that cluster. And if you are creating a new cluster member 3, after a few weeks, then that application that was deployed on the cluster will get evenly distributed to the cluster member 3 also automatically. You don't have to really do anything other than sync. So like that. So any configuration, only one point I would like to make sure you all understand. So when you make any changes to the cluster member, make sure you do update the same in the cluster member template. That's available from version 7. You can do it from the console so that once that get updated, and when you create a new cluster member, it's going to get the information from the cluster template and not from the members that you already have in the cluster. So make sure you update the cluster member template also when you make, for example, if you're increasing the Java heap size to the cluster members, make sure you do update the cluster template as well. Let's move on to slide 9. So there are two types of cluster. It's very simple, very basic, vertical, horizontal. Vertical running on the same machine. Horizontal can be on different machines. It can be on different zones. So the advantage of vertical clustering is the cost-wise, because you just have one machine needed. But the disadvantage is if that system is crashed, there is no WLM, so everything is gone. So when we talk about horizontal cluster, it has one advantage and disadvantage. The cost-wise, you may have to have multiple servers, machines, and the advantage is if that one machine is completely crashed, the servers running on other machines can serve your request. You can configure either type of clusters. You can have it on the same machine, two server cluster members, and you can have in other machines more cluster members. So let's move on to the next slide, slide 10. WLM routing policy. This is, again, very specific to the EJB WLM routing policy. Let's move on to slide 11. So the routing is what the EJB WLM routing works based on the weight that's associated with the cluster member. By default, it comes with 2. That's how it's been since version, I don't know, maybe 5.1, 5.0 period. Like, the weight is going to be, the default is 2. So it uses the round robin algorithm when the weights are equal. For example, if you have 4 cluster members with the weight set to 2, then all the requests will be round robin. Use the round robin algorithm. So the weight can be modified. You can modify it in the configuration, or if you want to do it in the fly, where the one machine is like a hanging or not responding properly, and you want to send most of the requests to the next cluster member, you can do it dynamically by changing the runtime weight. I do have a screenshot in the next slide. Probably we can go over that in detail. If you need more information, you can go to this link. And I would like to make sure everyone understand about one more point about the preferred local. When you create a cluster, there will be a checkbox on the bottom which is saying the preferred local. That will be checked automatically. So suppose if you have two clusters, member, and the client piece is running on the same cluster member 1 client code, so maybe it can be a WAR file running in the same JVM or a standalone Java client running on the same machine. The request is going to go to the cluster member 1 only because you have enabled the preferred local. The request is not going to go to the other cluster members. This is just to avoid for the better performance. So if you see the request is going to just to one cluster member, not to other cluster member, the very first thing to you check is the preferred local is set or not. This you can confirm it in a file called cluster.xml file. You can open that file. It's under the profile root, config, cell, cell name, clusters, cluster name, and you will see the file, and you can make sure if that's enabled or not in the configuration as well. Because we do get a lot of CMS because of this. It's a very good feature, but you need to make sure you are configuring it properly. Let's move on to next slide, slide 12. Yeah, this is the chart I was talking about in the previous slide. You can change the weight of how much request should go to the specific cluster member. You can do it in the configuration or on the runtime. So, for example, if you are getting like 4 requests, and if you want to send 2 requests to 1 request to one server and 3 requests to other server, maybe you can change the weight as 1 and other member as 3. Something similar to that. That's not the logic how it works. In the previous slide, I have provided a link. It has more information. So if you want to make a cluster member completely idle, if you don't want to send any request to a particular cluster member, you just come here to this page and put a zero under the runtime wait and then click update. That's it. No more requests. The existing request will be served, but no new request will be sent to that particular cluster member. Let's move on to the next slide, slide 30. HA basics. This is one of the very interesting topic. I'm kind of glad that I got an opportunity to discuss about it because I would say HA Manager is kind of a backbone of WebSphere application server, at least starting version 6.1, because so many users, so many services which use HA Manager for them to make highly available. Let's move on to slide 14. So, as I said in the beginning again, like the WLM depends on HA Manager, and if the HA Manager configuration is not properly configured, then WLM may not work. Not just your WLM, most of the services which uses HA Manager may not work properly. So, what is HA Manager? What is HA? The HA Manager is nothing but a framework. It's a framework, and it's an integral part integrated with the WebSphere application server starting version 6.0. And so many components which is in the WebSphere application server, your WLM, your SIP, your DRS, or so many other components which is in the WebSphere application server, registers themselves with the HA Manager framework to make themselves highly available. So in case of failure, the request can be routed to the other server automatically without any downtime. So it presents in all JVM, the HA Manager. I do get a question often, like, where the HA Manager is running. It's running on all JVM. It's on G Manager, Node Agent, Cluster Members, and your application servers. So it's significant only in network deployment. It's not significant in base. You have it or not, it makes no sense because it's just running on one application server. So it provides various asynchronous callbacks for the interested parties. So other parties register themselves with HA Manager, and HA Manager sends a signal back to the register party to activate or deactivate. Then it's a component headache to do the action based on what the HA Manager sends. So it works out of box. You don't have to make any changes, but there are few tuning tips. If you really want, I have provided one more HA Manager basic presentation like earlier. So in the WC, you can search my name, and you can go over the presentation. It has got a lot of details about the HA Manager. Let's move on to the next slide, slide 15. So this basic services, HA Manager provides four basic services. One is bulletin board, the HA group, agent framework, and partition managed group. In the last, agent framework and partition managed is used by just one user, which is the agent framework is used by DRS, data replication services. In memory-to-memory replication or DynaCache, they use this agent framework service. It provides hot backup service for primary, and you can have n number of backup members in the agent framework. Again, agent framework, DRS. And in case of partition managed group, only the core group bridge services make use of the PMG HA Manager service. It's a distributed state manager. It's called all our distributed cache. It's stored only in the memory, not persistent. So let's go to the now bulletin board, because this is one of the key things that we'll be discussing about it in this presentation again and again, bulletin board, because WLM uses bulletin board to carry the WLM routing information, actually. It's not just EJB WLM. I just want to make sure you understand that. It's not just EJB WLM. It can be other WLMs like your SIP WLM and other WLM also, but overall the unified clustering framework, the UCF we call it as, all the WLM make use of the bulletin board. It's kind of a state exchange mechanism, like a pub-sub, lightweight pub-sub. It's not actually a JMS pub-sub mechanism. It's a light, very lighter than that. It publishes the information. Who are subscribed to that services will get notified based on the subscription. The last thing to talk about is the HA group service. It's a policy-based failover mechanism. So many users the HA group. It can be your messaging engine or transaction manager, GTA adapter, and so many users or the component in the WebSphere application servers use this HA group. So four services, bulletin board, HA group, agent framework, PMG, and the important thing you have to remember just for the presentation is that bulletin board, because the WLM uses bulletin board to carry the WLM routing data. And let's move on to slide 16. Core group. It's one of the terms we use it in HA manager. It's a kind of a logical name. You can call it as it's you by default you have a default core group created automatically. So yeah, core group is a collection of processes. Like you can have multiple JVMs all together in one core group. So the core group is defined in cell scope, the core group .xml file configuration, and I just remembered about when I just saw this core group.xml file. Any change goes into the core group.xml file doesn't require a server restart. You really don't have to. It picks up dynamically. That's the beauty about that HA manager. So any changes you make that goes into core group.xml file doesn't require a server restart. The next point is the cluster cannot span across core groups. All the members or all in the cluster should belong to the same core group, actually. That's a restriction. Core group cannot span across cells. All the member of the core group must belong to the same cell. If you really want the core group communication, then you need to create a bridge, core group bridge. Probably we'll discuss about it later in the slide. A cell can contain more than one core group, or default, it will have one core group called default core group. I just want to mention one point here. This is not really much relevant to this presentation, but I just want to make sure everyone aware of. Like, we often get this question, how many cluster members, how many servers we can have in a single core group. The recommended number of servers are 50, but if you want to have more servers, you can have this custom property set, IBM CSY format version custom property set, and you can have up to 100 servers. Even this is not a restriction. Even if you have a machine which can handle that many loads, even you can go to 200 or 250, but make sure you are fine with that configuration. Let's move on to the next slide, slide 17. Multiple code groups. So as I said in the previous presentations, previous slide, so if you have multiple code groups, it's very important to bridge the code group, especially when you have your EJB running on the two different cluster members, client here and server. Two different DJVs running on two different cluster members, that's when you must bridge your core groups. And Krishna later in the will explain more about that, why it's really needed. So it's HA manager services, normally restricted to single core group, HA domain. But there is, when you talk about HA manager services, I'm talking about the four services we've seen already, the bulletin board services, agent framework, PMG, and your HA group services. So one exception to the services is the bulletin board. The bulletin board service, that's the only service which can communicate across the core groups, actually. You have core group 1, created core group 2, so that because it has to carry the WLM routing information from one cluster, one core group to other core group. So in order for that, you need to bridge your core groups properly. Core group... we talked about it, HA manager, bulletin board communication to span across core groups. A core group within a cell can be bridged. We call it as intra-cell. And a core group across cells can also be bridged. We call it as inter-cell. Let's move on to next slide, slide 18. So here we'll talk about the role of node agent and ORB in WLM. From here onwards, Krishna will take over from me. Krishna, it's all yours. Thanks.
Thank you, Kumran, and good morning, everyone. WLM is, as said by Kumran earlier, WLM depends on HA manager, and also there are two other components WLM depends. One piece is called node agent, which is an server process, mostly is an admin server process. And then there is another component called ORB, where WLM relies and work together with HA manager. Let's move to slide 19, please. Okay. First part is how node agent is involved in WLM. Basically, as I said, Node Agent is an admin process which will host a service called Location Service Daemon. Basically, what this service provides is it provides information about the registered information about the servers. So you will see one Node Agent process running in per physical machine, and then all the application servers that are running under that physical machine will actually register with the Location Service Daemon when they are coming up. So basically, LSD also provides an direct IOR, which is called as an interoperable object reference, which an ORP can understand. So to the caller, in the sense, whoever requests the LSD or the Node Agent about a certain information about an object they are looking for, and then LSD provides a direct reference to the caller. So WLM also uses the LSD cluster information for routing the EJB request. And so it keeps track of where to spray the request, right? So WLM uses partly the HA Manager Bulletin Board service, and as well as the LSD and the ORP services to pool together the information that it requires to spray the request. So one of the major concern, like we had seen so many complaints about saying that my WLM doesn't work, right? When we start investigating the issue, really a simple small programming mistake can lead to this situation. Like usually the application developers, usually they try to bootstrap to the Node Agent, assuming that it is only single point, right? They can directly do a lookup on the Node Agent process and get the information. But it is not at all encouraged to do the bootstrapping to the Node Agent. The only environment allowed to bootstrap is a ZOS, because ZOS altogether uses a different logic than the distributed operating systems. That's one main reason whenever a programmer does a build an initial context when they are invoking an EJB, in the provider URL of the initial context, they should not include Node Agent Bootstrap. This is the one information that I want to share with you over the years of experience, because we can nail down the problem at the initial stage. As Kumaran said earlier, WLM is more matured component, and then it is more stable component. We see very few issues with the WLM itself, but most of the issues are maybe either a programming error or maybe a misconfiguration. We'll see how it can be in following slides. Let's move on to slide 20. Okay, so how ORP is involved in the process, right? So application server uses and also provides an ORP which provides, say, a client-server communication. And then the EJB container depends on the ORP. Basically, when the application server comes up, when the EJB container is initiated, the EJB container will register all the EJBs that are deployed onto a JVM process with the ORB. So basically, ORB, thus the EJB container requires an ORB so that it can facilitate the client-server communications, right? So ORB basically manages both inbound requests for remote Java objects, meaning, so ORB running in an application server instance can listen for an inbound request, and also it can send an outbound request to the different ORB instances itself, right? And then ORB also provides a framework for the client to locate the EJBs on the servers. We'll see how it does in the following slides. And then main piece of interoperable, the ORBs can communicate is using a piece called IOR based on GIOP standards. What does this IOR is an interoperable object reference that if one process, JVM process, sends a request to the other JVM process, for particularly with the EJV request, then how both orgs will communicate is using IOR, which is a very critical piece that the org requires to communicate and also take necessary action based on the information provided in the IOR. So let's move on to the slide 21. So why bridging the core groups? Okay, let's move on to slide 22. So today's, as we said, today's topic, we wanted to mainly focus on how WLM depends on HR manager. And then this is the most, one of the important slide we often see on our daily job routines. Because of misinformation, we see a lot of PMRs. That's the idea of this presentation. We thought of it, we could help most of the developers and the administrator to with this information so that they can happily use this information and then reduce the number of PMRs and then they can solve the problems on their own. So basically, why the bridging of core group is important? Basically, if you look at the application server, WebSphere application server, large topologies, right? So basically, the large topologies can be configured. That means WebSphere cell has no theoretical limitation. That means you can have as many as server processes within a cell. But there is always a practical limitation, right? So the practical limitation is the resources. It can be memory. So that becomes practical limitation. So HM manager is the one piece. If you have very large number of core group members, then HA is basically a mesh of JVMs. That means each JVM must communicate with all rest of the JVMs. That means to maintain the state data. That's how the HA manager provides very hard failover features for various components. So one HA manager component provides a partition manage. That means you can partition your server members into different core groups, which reduces the resource consumption such as CPU and memory usage. So if you can refer to the large best practices for large topologies for how you can split the core groups and what are the advantages and disadvantages provided at the end of this presentation. And also HR manager core group provides a bulletin board service as explained by Kumaran. So each core group by default can only be managed per core group. That means all the members of a core group can read and post bulletin board information other than other services provided by the HA. They are all restricted to only one core group. But that means if you have one core group hosting a messaging engine, for example, only the failover can occur within the members of that core group. That means the singleton services supported by HM manager cannot spun across multiple core groups. The only the exception in this case is a bulletin board service. So the bulletin board service by default allows only for the members of that core group. But however, there is a service called partition managed service, which facilitate bridging between the core groups. That means when you bridge between the core groups, then the bulletin board information can flow across the multiple core groups. Why we need to bridge core group itself, right? I'm like, if you want to have an EJB WLM to work properly, you will need to bridge the core groups together so that the information can be flown between two core groups. Why we need that? If you look at the slide in here, so basically you have a cluster consisting of a four members spun across two physical machines, and then all of them are belong to a core group CG1, right? And then there is a node agent process. Node agent is an admin process. It acts as a server process itself with an additional administrative features right? Now, in this diagram, you can see your node agent on machine 1 is also part of core group 1. But if you look at the right side on machine 2, the node agent itself is in a different core group on machine 2, which belongs to core group 2. So in this case, when the application server comes up on machine 2, what happens is server C and server D register all its objects that are hosted to LSD, which is hosted by the node agent on machine 2, right? In left side, if you see on machine 1, server A and server B will register with LSD on node agent running on machine 1. So now, if you see, if you have not bridged these core group CG1 and CG2, that means the LSD information will not flow, and then WLM plugin will not be able to understand or have the complete information about the LSD hosted on the machine 2, which is very critical part. So how the WLM component also internally hosts a service called LSD cluster. So basically the LSD cluster will not have the complete information if you have not bridged the two core groups. It is always to have multiple core groups to reduce the CPU and memory utilization, but in case if you have EJB posted on, as I explained in this scenario, if you want to split your cell into a multiple core groups, and there is a practical limitation too, because you cannot have a node agent in each and every core groups. So the practical, because of that practical limitation, and then WLM can take advantage of the bridging service hosted by the HM manager service. So with the bridging of the core groups facilitates the information to flow across the core groups. Thus, the WLM has all the information about the LSD clusters, then it can properly load balance, and then it can avoid certain failures, which we will see a type of failures in following slides. Let's move on to slide 23. Request flow. Let us understand the request flow of the EJB. Let's move on to the slide 24. Okay, I tried to come up with a simple diagram with an explanation about some of the how it reflects, the flow reflects based on the programming practices, right? In this case, I took a node agent, I fixed the bootstrap address to 2810 and then rblizzner address to 9101, and then the client server where my web client, which requests the EJBs, are hosted. On a bootstrap 2827. I intentionally left the rblizzner address to zero. That means when the rblizzner address becomes zero, that means ARP can choose any dynamic port as a listener port during the server initialization, right? So, and then on the EJB server 1, that is another cluster member where I fix the ARP listener address to 9401 and then bootstrap is 2821. So in this slide, I also showed a piece of code that I used to demonstrate this simple WLM request, right? In my code, I am not passing any arguments to the initial context. And then I am using a lookup, and then I am narrowing down to a home object, and then I am creating an EJB request. And then once the EJB request is created, and then I can invoke a business method, right? So in this slide, how the flow goes is during the initial context in this scenario, since I am not passing anything, in my example, my EJB client is running in the client server 1, right, which initializes the context. So that in that case, it directly bootstraps to the local name server instance, right, just, and it initializes the context. And then when I do a lookup, then only the things will go out of the client server 1 JVM. And then it goes to the name service, because now with the lookup, the string that I am passing to looking up for a bean, then the orb will have to find where exactly the bean is hosted, right? And then once the WLM has the request information about that, and then it can create an EJB. But essentially, the WLM, whenever you are using bootstrapping to the server process, the WLM gets an indirect reference. That means all the WLM IO are the indirect references. That way, the WLM can use these indirect references to load balance the request. So actually, if you see, look at the, there is a small white box called WLM Info or IOR. That is the WLM plugin on the client side, which has the information from the location service daemon, which is obtained from the node agent. We will see in the subsequent request how does that look like. Once the WLM has the information, then it can find the target server, and then it spaces the request to the target server, and then the client can invoke the business operation on the target server, and the response can be sent back. So let's move on to the slide 25. Okay, so the first request flow, the trace points that I have provided are the ORB trace points, because the only communication, lower-level communication, you will have better understanding of how EJB WLM works. That's what I try to do. Because in my initial context case, I did not provide any provider URL information. So I eliminated few of the requests, locate requests and responses. But in this case, since the request, as I said, when it always does with a lookup, now in this case, the first request that is going out of the client server is a locate request. As we all know, the ORB provides, GIOP part of the ORB provides four types of messages. In fact, five types of messages. One is the locate request, and it also has a locate reply message, and then request message, and response message. And there is another message pattern called fragment. So that means ORB can also send a request in fragments. That means if you have very large request, then ORB can split that request into multiple fragments. These are all part of GIOP specification, which ORB uses. Right. So in this case, the first request that is going out of the client is a locate request. And then you can see the port where it is going. It is 2829. That is essentially a bootstrap port. When a bootstrap port request goes to a bootstrap port, what the ORB does is, in turn, it sends a locate reply message with an object forward. If you look at the reply status, it is has an object forward. That whenever there is an object forward, right? So that means when you are trying to bootstrap to a remote server says, hey, okay, you are looking for this, but here is what I think where the actual reference might be. So what the information I have is, and this piece of IOR I can forward you so that you can use that information and you can find where exactly the reference of that object exists, right? So in this case, the EJB server always sends a locate reply and then with the object forward. And then in this case, since you are bootstrapping directly to the application server instance, the locate reply message always has an indirect IOR, which is where the WLM comes into picture. In this case, on the EJB server, WLM running on the EJB server 1 constructs an WLMable IOR, and then it sends that information to the client. So in this case, I tried to show you how when you enable the WLM trace, you will see how WLM understand this WLM IOR, where you see what the IOR has. Basically, IOR has an information about host and the port and then object key reference where the ORB can interact, right? Let's move on to the next slide, 26, to understand further flow. So now after the slide 25, the client side has an indirect IOR. And then it uses that IOR because the IOR it received is an indirect IOR. It's not, it has the direct reference for the object it is looking for. Now, the client-side ORB makes a request, say, okay, now I want to make a request based on the IOR I received from the previous request. Right? That IOR has a request. Now see where the request is going. It is request is going to 9101, which is essentially a node agent listener port number, and then the request is going to the node agent because that's where your LSD is located. Now, in turn, the node agent responds back saying that, hey, here is the information that you have requested, right? Now, in the message header on the right side, you see it is a fragmented. That means maybe the response of the LSD node agent has a very bigger information because it has all the information of all the cluster members. That's why it is fragmented. It sends in maybe in the fragments, right? So the once the client receives the response from the node agent, right, the IOR that is forwarded by the node agent to EJB to the client is an IOR which is pointing to an EJB server one. You can see the WLM decrypts the IOR. Now it has WLM IOR for the EJB server one. Let's move on to the slide 27. So basically what it has is, basically at this point, on the slide 26, if you see the client side, WLM already has information where it can send the next request to, right? In the slide 27, so again, the request type is a request message, and it goes to, now at this time, it goes to directly to the EJB server one, right? And now EJB server responds with the reference to the home interface. Okay, say, okay, here is the interface that you are looking for, reference to the interface, right? Now, let's move on to slide 28. And slide 28, now, once the client has a reference for the home interface, now the client can call the create method, and then the create method will, again, essentially at this point, the create method will go back to the same EJB server one. Now, the EJB server one responds back with the references to the actual interface. Now, let's move on to, at this point, once the create method is complete, now at this point, the client is ready to invoke a business method, and then the WLM also has the information. By this time, WLM client side also has the information about the target where it want to spray the request. So what happens is during the request and response with the IOOP request, the WLM will also send the information about the cluster state information, right? So basically, the WLM on the server side, whoever posts the bulletin board messages, WLM plugin reads it and then tries to maintain the current information, and then that information will be sent to the clients as an IOOP response, as part of IOOP response, right? That's how the client-side WLM has the current information where to send the next request. In case even if one of the target member is down, the WLM has the updated information because the bulletin board service and of the HM manager is the quality of the service provided by the HM manager bulletin board service is pretty quick. It can post and send the request and response messages very fast. That's how the HA is a very important piece for the WLM information. Let's move on to the slide 29 to discuss about some important custom properties that I thought worth to discuss, which is not available any in the info center. One such property is the IBM cluster feedback mechanism, which is mentioned in the slide 30 of the presentation. So by default, WLM uses a combination of cluster weights and the number of outstanding requests. So again, like as presented by Kumaran in slide 12 about the cluster weights, now you can dynamically adjust the cluster weights without even restarting the application server, because if you see there are many requests because of the prefer local feature, right, and then that enables the request always to be sent to the members on running on that local server, right? So that is for performance reasons to avoid any latency in the network. Always a prefer local option is enabled. If it is enabled, the prefer local servers are chosen. In that case, one might complain that, okay, now I am seeing imbalance of the EJP requests. All my requests are going to the same physical machine, but they are not going to the other machine, right? So always it is because of the prefer local. But if you see that imbalance, then probably you can increase the number of weights, right, to increase in the runtime to see if the requests are going to the other JVMs, right? So again, the prefer local also necessarily not mean that the WLM always sends a request to the prefer local, right? Depending upon the outstanding request, it can also elect at that point to send the request to the remote JVMs, right? So for that, the default mechanism used by the WLM is one. That is, as explained in the chart 31, when one is enabled, it uses both the weights and the outstanding request information. This is the default behavior. If you have not set this property as a cluster property, as the cell level property, the default WLM uses weights and outstanding requests. But there are situations might also required for your environment where you want to only use the weighted information, or also you want to use only depending upon the outstanding request. The routing must be done depending upon the outing request. That means you can use this custom property to take advantage of how WLM can change its behavior based on this custom property. So, and then when you enable the WLM trace, you can see the default, like the property is set to false. That means the WLM uses the default mechanism, which is based on weight and then number of outstanding requests. Let's move on to the slide 31. So there is another important property that we want to make sure people understand it. That is an connect timeout. Essentially, when there is a network issue or something like that, the org tries to establish an initial connection. This timeout property is a 3 minutes default. So that means when initial request is sent, if ORB decides that the request has to go out of this JVM to the remote JVM, and then if there is any difficulty in establishing connection to the remote JVM, then it can wait up to 3 minutes. Okay, let's continue on 32. So, okay, slide 32 is a request timeout. Essentially, the request timeout, default request timeout is 180 seconds. It can be changed as shown in the slide. Basically, request timeout is that once the ORB establishes a connection to the remote JVM or the remote ORB, and then once it sends the request, then it can wait up to 3 minutes for the response. Usually, this ORB communication should be very faster. Within the split seconds, the client side should see the response. But there are in case where the JVM is, the remote JVM is too busy after it accepts the request somehow, and then the response can be varied. So you can tune this in case if you don't want to wait for any response because of users complaining about there is a delay in the EJP request, then this is the one property that you can focus on. But we would encourage it to be default value always, because we very, very rarely see slow response from the ORB. The ORB responses, as I said, should be pretty quick within the split second once it completes the request. Let's move on to slide 33. Okay, common issues that we encounter in day-to-day life, particularly with respect to the WLM and HA. Let's move on to the slide 34. One such information is the CORBA no implement. So basically the CORBA no implement is more general message or exception message from the R, but it always has an informative message attached to it, right? So in this case, it is a forward limit breach. So whenever the WLM is trying to select a target member, so it gets a forward limit reached based on the IOR. It has it when the WLM decides that, okay, I have the right IOR of the object reference. Now I can elect a member as a target member. Then I can send a request, and then all of a sudden WLM gets from the ORB saying that forward limit reached. So if you understand how the ORB communication flows, basically, when there is a locate request, then you see a forward. That means, let us say, if a connection request goes to a JVM A, where it's supposed to fulfill the request. But in this case, what happens is the remote system thinks that I don't have this reference of this object hosted by me. Let me forward the IOR that I have. To the member, the request member, so that it can find out the target. So when there are no more members that available to find the reference, then that's where the forward limit is thrown back to the WLM. The most of the common symptoms that we saw is sometimes the customer can instantiate multiple instances of ORB. So when does that happen? So each time they initiate the program, then a ORB instance is created, and then when the ORB, multiple ORB instances are created, that basically WLM may not have the information about the target ORB instance that it needs to invoke, right? Basically, essentially what it happens is whenever ORB instance is initiated and then used by the program, and then it closes the instance. That means that IOR received for that previous instance may not be available. So that is the one most common issue that we notice. And then this problem can easily debug. If you get a Java core or a thread dump, like essentially if you see a reader thread or a listener thread in the Java core and the thread dump, the part that I highlighted is O is the ORB instance. Usually it should be zero. That means the ORB instance always should be zero. That means zero indicates that it has only one instance of the ORB. If you see any increased in number, like in this case it is 123, that means the program has created almost like 123 instances of the ORB, which is not at all recommended by application server, because we always encourage customers to use the ORB instantiated by the application server. In case in your program, if you have to instantiate ORB, then probably you can do a lookup with the ORB instance that is hosted by the WebSphere itself using a lookup for the ORB, and then that way you can reuse the instance instead of instantiating your own ORB that can cause this type of failures. Let's move on to the next slide, 35. Another common issue we notice is with the same, again, no implement, in this case, no cluster data available. So basically that tells that the WLM LSD router cannot select any target member, right? So in this case, this message is seen most of the cases, as I said, like WLM plugin doesn't have the information about the target member. That means on the LSD, which is a location service daemon, runs on a node agent, so no one has at registered, or the LSD created by the LSD cluster created by the WLM doesn't have information at from about the target members. So that means if you have the scenario where you have the EJB is hosted on a node agent which is not part of the within the same core group, then that is the most common scenario we notice. In this case, the simple solution is when you bridge the core groups, then the issue can be resolved for this most commonly seen no cluster data available. Let's move on to slide 36. No target exception impulse. So this is also one message that we often see where users complain about this exception, my WLM doesn't work. When we check, by mistakenly some of the admins might have disabled the HA manager on some of the cluster members because HA can be disabled at per JVM instance. So make sure that you enabled the HA manager on all cluster members that belongs to part of a cluster. And also, if you have breached the node agent, if they are partitioned across multiple core group instances, should avoid this type of exceptions. Let's move on to the next slide, 37. So another piece the WLM relies on WLM relies on is an HA manager, as I said. That's how HA manager views instability can cause WLM not to function properly. Some of the view instability cause can be an out-of-memory error when one of the JVMs that are part of the cluster group running into an out-of-memory error. And then firewalls blocking the DCS ports, and then there is a port conflicts on network issues. As you can refer to the links provided in the reference section for more details. So for those conditions, the view can become unstable. And then this condition can easily identified with the DCSV 8050i message. Basically, it tells you the information about the state of the view. So basically in the at the bottom line you see AV, CD, CN, DF, where DF is a 40, but always for a stable view your AV, CD, CN must always match to the number. In this case it is 10. So that means AV is the number of members in the view, and then CD is the number of connected members. CD is the basically is the discovered member. CD is the discovered members and CN is the connected members, and then the AV is the number of members joined the view. All these three are equal, that means the views are stable and then WLM will work properly. But WLM usually also might fail during the first initial request, but essentially once the first request is successful, then WLM should maintain all the cached information and then thus avoiding all the unnecessary IOP requests that are required. So let's move on to slide 38. So you can use, we try to come up with an most references that can be useful for the users. Like we try to come up with three developer articles, one for best practices for large WebSphere topologies, and then understanding about the EJB calls, how it operates in an ND environment, and also then enterprise flow for EJB requests, two developer articles, and then there is another WSTE for best practices for our problem determination. Let's move on to next slide. And then with this, I am passing control back to Kumran.
Thanks, Krishna. Thanks for the great presentation. And I do apologize for the technical difficulty that happened during the presentation. It's really very unfortunate, but we cannot help much with that. So anyway, so today we have seen what is WLM, what is HA manager, what is cluster, and how WLM works with HA manager, and what is important. And most important thing is if you have your node agent not part of the core group, and if that cluster members are registered with the node agent, make sure you bridge the core groups so that WLM would work properly. And there's a couple of things I want to mention here. Like sometimes we do get PMRs. My request is still going to a server, but the server is already going through out-of-memory condition. And WLM will send the request because unless otherwise it cannot even ping the server. WLM do spray the request to the server, which is going through out-of-memory. That's kind of it's working, the way it is working. So another thing I would like to make a note here is, like, when you have a couple of two cells and would like to do a intercell communication between two cells, so make sure the cell names are different. If the cell names are same, the WLM may not work and it may throw exceptions. So that's another point I would like to make. And we also talked about the importance of node agent, ORB, and everything, and we also talked about some common WLM issues. I would like to mention something, like, if you have the line will be open shortly for Q&A, but if you do have a question after that, feel free to ask the question in DW Answer. You can go to developers.ibm.com/answers, where you can ask questions to any one of us. You can put a tag and the name KUMARAN at Kumaran. You can ask the question specific to me or to the Krishna. Or you can ask the question in DW Answer, so somebody else, some other specialist can answer to your question. From this point, I'll pass it on back to Kathy. Kathy?
Thank you, Kumaran and Krishna, for the presentation. Now it's time to move on to the Q&A session.
The first question is coming from the line of Mr. Kartek. Sir, your line is open. You may begin.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, Kartik.
Yeah, usually we don't create more core groups. We only have the default core group members or bin default core groups. So what's the advantage in creating multiple core groups rather than having in only one default core groups?
It depends on the size of your servers, how many servers you have in the core group.
Yeah, we have many, like more than 25.
25 is good, as I said, right? Like, even up to 100, you are fine, actually. See, the only thing is about the resource. The HA manager does use a little bit of resource, not much actually, like I would say less than 1% of CPU. I do have the one of the link in slide 35 or 6 actually, or the Weave instability, 35 or 36. If you go to that one of that link, it explains very clearly when you should increase and why you should increase. So for your case, just having 25 servers in a cluster group, you don't have to create a core group, multiple core groups. If you have more core group servers, like 50, 70, 100 or more than that, then you may have to split that into two core group and you may have to bridge at that time.
Okay, and also about the preferred local, you said when preferred local is there and the affinity is there, it always goes to the single cluster member. And what's the advantage? I don't see any advantage in having the preferred local, because even though the preferred local is set or not, the affinity request has to go to the same JVM at all times. So why is the preferred local?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Why the preferred local is there? Because either the preferred local is there or not, if there is an affinity request there, it has to go to the JVM, same JVM again and again.
The way the WLM requests are spread, actually it depends on the business operation, right? Essentially, the WLM is done for session beans, right? So in this case, the affinity will not be guaranteed for stateless. At least stateless can be spread to anywhere, right? But if it is a stateful session bean, and then WLM tries to maintain affinity, the preferred local is when your initial request is the target member, where the target member. If the target member resides within the same physical machine, right, and then one of those members will be elected as part of the preferred local. So in case if you have to send the request out of your physical machine, then that is another TCP call which has to go across the wire. That is the performance. To save the performance, preferred local feature will help to gain for the request response, faster responses. So preferred local doesn't mean the request will go to the same JVM. It can be any other JVM running on the same physical machine.
Okay. If it is vertical clustering.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
The next question is coming from Mr. Steve Mijuri. So your line is open. You may begin.
Oh, hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. This is in regards to a PubSub solution, which is installed on a cluster, WAS cluster. And a PubSub is a customized application, or the application which we developed. The subscribers are kind of, you know, when they are installed in the cluster, they run on different cluster members. And they both try to go compete and perform the same functionality. Let's say I'm going to update a database from a topic message. Now, for this kind of a solution, will I have to just run it on only on one cluster member because of this limitation, or can I still have that solution run on a cluster? I mean, which kind of defeats my functionality.
Okay. To answer, if I understand your topology, let me reiterate the question what I understand. So you, let's talk about only the subscriber in your case. Okay, you have a subscriber where you want to run a subscriber. Your question is whether you need to run that subscriber in a one cluster member or you can run it on multiple cluster members. Because is that my basic understanding correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
So in this case, basically, the way HA and the WLM works, right? In this case, if you have a cluster member acting as you were the client, EJB client, or assuming you're the client which does function as a subscriber, right? So in this case, if you know all the cluster members, they themselves as a JVM, part of a core group, so that means any JVM will act as a client. In this case, a cluster member act as a client will also have the WLM client-side plugin, right? And then the client machine can also act as a server itself. So that means the WLM will get the information from the bulletin board based on the IOP response. In your case, if you need to maintain an affinity, then probably if you have some mechanism to maintain the state, then you can run on multiple cluster members. But in case if you can't maintain any state information where WLM can maintain an affinity, in that case, then maybe you are restricted to run your client in one cluster member. Hope I'm able to at least come to almost near to your expectation.
Oh, thank you for attempting. The only thing is, let's say I have a message. The scenario is, let's say I have a topic message, which the subscriber need to go update the database. Now, if I install my application on a cluster, and the cluster is a two-cluster member, so that means there are two subscribers running for these two cluster members, one in each. And one subscriber gets the message, performs the update, right, which my functionality has been achieved. Now, if the second subscriber, which is also is the same piece of code because it got installed as on a cluster server, it also goes try to perform the same functionality. That means I'm doing a duplicate. Now, in order to avoid this duplicate, am I stuck with just one member? If that's the case, then I'm going to lose the availability. But if I open up with the two members, then in that case, I'm kind of, you know, I'm having high availability, but my functionality is repeated, and I'm going to get an issue in my database with the data.
So assuming your subscriber is an MDB?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so MDB, the WLM is not applicable for message-driven beans. It's only applicable for stateful or stateless session beans. So the WLM, the EJB specification doesn't mandate that the MDB should be load balanced. For that reason, the MDBs are a piece of different component altogether, which really doesn't come into the WLM scenario. So in this case, if you want to load balance your message-driven beans, right, depending upon the type of JMS provider you are using, so then the JMS provider will have ability. Like in this case, if you are using MQ, then MQ resource adapter, most like advanced adapters provide
certain custom properties where MDBs can be properly share the load. And that meaning there is no component available to balance the MDB request, but the features provided by the MQ resource adapter, there are some custom properties which you can configure, which takes care of evenly notifying the MDBs that are listening for the messages. And then in case of WLM also provides load balancing abilities, but that depends on specific to your JMS provider.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
We do have the DW answer, it's developer.ibm.com/answers. If there are any further questions, you can just ask us over there. Make sure you use the tag WAS at the bottom when you ask the question. So anyone from, or any specialist from our SP application server organization can answer the question.
There was one question I remember was in the chat. User asked about, is there a cluster template the way we do for the profile template? To answer that question, Kamran will take that question.
Yeah, I think when you create a very first cluster, the template will get created under the profile template directory, template / clusters. That's where it will create the template under that folder. You can update any changes you make to the cluster member. There is options on the console where you can go and update that information in the template as well. So that was the one I was referring to in my presentation. So
that ends our Q&A session, as there are no more questions. So we're going to conclude this session. I would like to thank Kumaran and Krishna for presenting. You all have a great day.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Bye. Thank you.